I don't know if you've caught on to some of these old preachers around here. Brother Willie pulled it on us, and Brent did. You probably heard it a few more times. And they got two messages and only given one spot to give it in that night. They preach along for about 20 minutes, and then they say, I said all that to say this. then they switch gears, pull out two more verses, and preach another 20 minutes. Well, I'd like to do a little Latin to do this in tonight and give you an example of my bringing up. And I was brought up on a farm. Most of you know, just a plowboy. And I wasn't a rancher. It wasn't glorious, you know, out riding your horse and spending the night in the range. I was eating dirt most of the time. And it was a good experience. I just wish I'd been born in a family that father wasn't such a workaholic. He thought if you didn't have two jobs, you weren't worth your salt. And so he worked in the factory as a superintendent 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and then we farmed enough land to keep a normal family busy if that's all they did. And of course, I was the only boy, three younger sisters, and so I always thought I was abused, but it was good for me. Tonight I want to talk about the vision, a personal vision. Each and every one of us, that we need our own personal vision. We get wrapped up in following the crowd. We get wrapped up in so many other things that we never seek the Lord for what He has for us to do in the place we are or in the place we should go. And that happens. Each and every one of us Christians, once we're saved, we need to look for that vision that God has for us. If you don't have your personal vision, a lot of things are going to happen in your life that's going to discourage you from following the vision of the other man. And you aren't supposed to be following his vision. Your vision might be to support that man, but it needs to be your personal vision from the Lord. But I need to do some batting first to get to this. So take you back to farming. I don't know if you realize that Jim Song talked about going to the fields. This morning, for those of you that were here, there's so much mention of farming and I've been thinking about this message for a good while, and so it just maybe that's why I noticed it so much. But what is the main curse, the number one curse of the modern farmer today? The main curse. What is the curse to the modern farmer? And it's something I've given a lot of thought to. Think about a minute. You go back in the olden days, to the good old days, you give a man a hoe and he worked his garden and he fed his family. Go a little longer, and they come up with it with an ox and a mule and a horse and he worked from daylight till dark. Worked hard. He farmed a field. He fed his family. And then you give him a machinery. He had the old steam engine, some old tractors, and he worked a whole section, daylight till dark. He fed his family. Well, as I growing up, my dad, when I was just 2 or 3 years old, still had horses on the farm. He was one of the old diehards that saw them as an advantage. But the curse to the modern farmer isn't that Brazil learned how to irrigate. That was a big problem when I was farming. And it wasn't that the locust came through with a hail, damaged your crop. It wasn't that the EPA threw out DDT and all these other chemicals that used to be the miracle thing because they're not safe to eat the grain afterwards and they get in the river and all these things. It wasn't even the grain embargo because Russia decided to go down and pounce on Afghanistan. And so the Russian... So the United States can put a grain embargo against Russia. My corn went from $3.50 a bushel to 97 cents in less than 3 months. You can't grow corn for 97 cents a bushel. It is not possible. You can't pay the interest on the land you bought to grow it on for 97 cents a bushel, at least not in Michigan. The whole problem with modern farming today came from the headlight. You believe that? The headlight in the front of that tractor. It changed the attitude of the farmer. No longer is he working for to feed his family. He gets greedy. Man, I'm going to steal a few hours from tonight. I'm going to work a little longer. I'm going to destroy my family life. I'm going to be so blasted tired that I can't get up the next morning without some pills or whatever. You're going to makes you go deeper in debt. Man, I can plow an extra 4 hours every day, and now I can buy more land, which means I got to buy more seed and fertilizer, and then I got a more risk. And it all comes together in 1 year with the rain and the hail and then the drought and then more rain when it shouldn't have been there. And you lose the whole thing and you've risked everything. Had a farmer, our neighbor. We were just little guys. These guys borrowed $1 million to plant 3,000 acres of navy beans. $1 million. It came up a rain when the beans were perfect. They were just right, ready to harvest, and beans have to be dry. And these guys saw it rain for 30 days. They didn't get that. They're out $1 million. It's $1 million in things that they could no longer sell. It was seed and fertilizer. And diesel fuel, $1 million, and they sat there, they about had heart attacks. It was a bad deal. They got a blessing from the Lord. They was able to get a few days where it was dry enough. They hired every farmer and they could find that would come over and help them, and they knocked out the 3,000 acres in the two or three good days they had, and sold, and they just broke even and sold everything they had and got out. So that's it. Them boys got smart. But it all came from a headlight. Greed. You know? There's the thing that got me to realizing that farming wasn't where I belonged because it was ruining me. There was a successful farmer, and it had a fold-out picture of the map of the North Americas. And I loved that thing. I kept it around until it started working on me. I realized what it was saying. You got old, a farmer, they called him, get his name right here. They called him Greedy Grabacre. That was Mr. Farmer, Greedy Grabacre. And he's standing with his heels about on, his left heel on El Paso and his right heel up there on by Denver somewhere. And his toes are lapping into the Pacific Ocean. And he's up here looking across the ocean like this. And, his economist is up in the corner and says, buy Asia. You know, you've got the Americas, now buy Asia. And it showed on the picture, you know, here's the Mississippi River turned into just a culvert. Because he's got this huge tractor that he plows and discs and drags and sprays for weeds and bugs and plants and cultivates all in one pass. And it was too much trouble to turn around to Mississippi. So he put a culvert in that thing and run clear to the Atlantic where he turned around. He's got this big machine up picking trees like it was corn. And two befores are coming out the back. This is a picture in my mind. It really was there. And I began to realize where I was living, what I was doing for. I was Marvin Grabacre. I didn't have the North Americas. I didn't even have a county. I barely had a garden in comparison to most people. But it's a mental attitude. Well, that all came, what I see, from a headlight. You can do everything on a farm with headlights and a tractor at night except pick stones and plant. We probably could have figured out a way to pick stones. But because that was such a hated job, we decided to put that on the shelf too. But you can't plant. You got to drive straight to plant. Now, I know, Danny, you and your mathematics, you could figure out how much more corn you could get on a crooked row. But you can't cultivate a crooked row. The tractor makes its turn, and the planter makes a different curve. When you come back with your cultivator, the planter doesn't make the same curve. So you either run over the corn to get the cultivator to go where the corn was that you just run over, or you go around the tractor, and the cultivator takes out the corn. So when you get ready to harvest, then you got a combine that is a backwards tractor, and it don't turn the same either. If you've ever seen these things, and they just mow down the corn. So you don't get as much corn by planting crooked. Okay, bear with me. So the rows have to be straight because other people have to follow to do something else. And when we get out in our Christian lives, we've got to have a goal to go to. Because other people are going to come behind and do some cultivating. And we want to go out there and wander around and do our thing and fill our lives with what we have. And you haven't made your row straight. The guy behind you is going to have a harder time. You're going to lose some precious seed. Some precious fruit, some of that corn is going to get run over just to get it cultivated. Some of that corn is going to be damaged. We're talking about this morning. It all fits in so perfectly. If you was here for the morning meetings, what Bill's been sharing the last two meetings, it all fits in. Man, if you don't lay the foundation right, the reason that we're still down there battling, some of the things we're battling in Mexico, is because they didn't do it right. They sugarcoated the gospel and handed them what they wanted rather than what they needed. They need to know a God of judgment, and that's the thing that I've harped on more this last year preaching. If you don't know the God of the Bible. I had a real opportunity to speak with the bishop of the Mormon church there in San Luis. And there's three bishops in this. It's a town, pretty good size. They got three churches and three different bishops. And he's a brother of a young man we've won to the Lord. These two brothers have got a mother that is the flag waver for the Catholic Church. And now the older brother is a Mormon. And you got a cousin who is a pastor of a Seventh-day Adventist. So you've got him on all sides. And this kid gets saved, and he's trying to witness to him. So this Mormon comes over, and he starts right out, man. He gives me the riot act on the Catholics. Man, their Christ is still hanging on the cross. Their Christ isn't the all-powerful God. He needs his mother to come along and help him out. And what it boiled down to was that the Christ of the Catholic Church isn't the same one revealed in the Bible. And then he blasted the Jehovah's Witnesses. Well, man, they can't believe in a God that can be manifested in the flesh, and that Jesus is all powerful, and came down to the same conclusion. The Jehovah's Witness, Christ is not the Christ revealed in the Bible. So then he spent an hour and a half, and he is a very well-read man, and he gave me the whole history of the Mormon Church and how that Quetzalcoatl, who was a Indian god or a fable, or, you know, he was real according to him. He's got history books that prove it. And he gave the whole story of how Quetzalcoatl came through the Americas looking for the lost tribe and finally found Jose Smith to listen to him and commanded the angels to give him the tablets. And he went on and on and on and finally said, sir, what's the difference between you and your mother? The difference between you and the Jehovah's Witness. Where did you get all this? Well, I got this book and that. What about the Bible? Where does it say in the Bible? It says your Christ isn't the same Christ as the Bible.
Amen.
Right or wrong, got any foundation or not, the same reason that you reject the Catholics and Jehovah's Witness, I have to reject you. He says, I got to go. Last I heard, he resigned from being a Mormon, or Mormon bishop. I think he still goes to the meetings, but he's no longer their bishop. I don't know how much that little talk had to do with it, but I praise the Lord. Somebody, we have to get it done straightly and rightly. We have to attack the problem, not just try to cover it up. Okay, back to our story. Have you ever been lost in a field or in a plant? I got lost there one night. My dad got called away to work, and I was just going to go into ninth grade. I guess I was 15. So I rented my dad's farm. I rented the neighbors. I was running about 300 acres there. And he came home on the weekends on Saturday night after work to check on me and stuff. But I was doing the whole thing. It was quite a learning experience there. I did that for 3 years. Decided to get out of it. But with the headlights, you plowed up all this ground and worked it all up in 2 days. And now you got to get it planted. And it's supposed to rain. And it's coming Sunday. And we didn't work on Sundays. My father was very strict on that. We didn't play baseball. We didn't do a lot of things. I was glad for not working. I'd not wanted to play baseball. You know how it goes. But I had to get that planted. So I'm out there trying to plant at night. Now, I don't know if you, when you drag a field before you plant it, you run across with this drag, and it makes the field look a lot like these curtains when you get done. And when you plant, you have a marker that drops down, and it makes a track just about like that, one of those. And if you go the same direction as that there with the drag and the planter, you can't follow it in the daytime. So we run at about a 20-degree angle and just worked back and forth and made all these tracks in the field at an angle. And then we started planting. We had one mark going across the field, cutting those stops. And in the daytime, you sit right up there, and you look down that track and find your tree at the other side, and you can hit it just as straight as you can, but you can't believe how straight you can plant looking across the field. But when it comes night, you get in the middle of that field, you can't even see the edge. You're buried out there in the middle of darkness with a tractor that's got two candles on each side, about all it amounts to. And one thing about lights at night planting is it shines against the dirt. It's just like driving in the fog. The more light you put on, the more reflection you get. The less distance you can see, and you're looking at a radiator cap. And here's all these lines going to the right, and all of a sudden you're thinking, man, can that one mark be right? And I was in the middle of that field. I can remember to this day, I was so confused. Man, something's not right. And I'd see this one that looked a little definite go off the side. Well, maybe he's right. And I tried to hold it on that one, and the first thing you know, I took my eyes off, and I missed it, and I'm sitting out in the middle of the field, and I had to stop. I said, man, I'm lost. I was lost in a field that I'd walked over 1,000 times. It happens in your spiritual life. Everybody else seems to go this way. And maybe they're going right, but God says, I got a plan for you. You're going to cross the grain just a little bit. You're going to end up the same side of the field, but you got your own path to cut. You've got to plant this row straight from here to there. If you follow the crowd, you're in trouble, brothers and sisters. That's where it all comes down. Crowd ain't wrong. You're wrong if you follow. If God puts you in the drag that makes all these lines the same way, praise the Lord. But if he puts you out there to cross the grain a little bit, and you try to follow that, you're going to live a miserable life. You're not going to fulfill the plan that God has for your life. And the only way you're going to put it, go straight across the field, whether you're in the drag or you're in the planter, is if you can see the other side of the field. Have you ever done any torch planting? Planting by torch? I think about the thing. We did some crazy things when I was growing up. All my dad and his desire to work forever. If you knew my dad, you'd understand. He's 62 years old and still building grain elevators, repairing other grain elevators. He's building houses by the numbers to rent in his spare time. He sleeps 2 or 3 hours a night is all, and he's got all these plans, and he's going to finish it all before October. I don't know how he can do it. But we need to. I'm about 7 or 8. From time I was 7 or 8 till 13 or 14, we did this until he quit, and then I had planted by night by myself. But he knew that he had to have these rows straight, and the only time he could plant was after work. So he'd come home after work, and I'd have the tractor gassed up and the fertilizer and the things, and off we'd go. Well, it got dark, and he wanted to keep planting for at least another decade. So what he'd do is he'd put me in one end of the field and my little sister at the other with matches in the fertilizer bags. I'm serious. We'd roll up them bags, and in the field, he's a quarter mile away when he turns around, and you can hear he doesn't have his lights on. He can't put lights on at night out there. You want to watch the torch. And the dust in the air makes the lights come back at you. So he's down there at the other end. I can hear him slow the tractor down, an old two-cylinder John Deere, putt, putt. He raises the thing, turns it around, and I could hear it go down. And that was my cue to light the torch. And I stood out there, and where are you supposed to come? I held the torch. I held a plastic line, so the plastic runs down your arm. It's a real pain. It's a real pain. But that's how he planted straight. He planted straight at night, straighter than he could during the day. Have you an idea why? Wasn't watching a thing else. Too dark to see a thing else. He's looking at the torch. He's looking at the mark at the other end. You without a vision, you without your own personal vision, you can't drive straight at night. When the troubles of this world begin to press on you and everything seems black and dark around you, and you're looking at the radiator cap, you're looking at yourself, you're not going to hit the mark. You're going to be defeated and discouraged. Where do you get a vision? Where does the vision come from? Religion tried to build it up within you, just like those headlights that you turn on when you're on that tractor and blare out across the dusty ground in Michigan. You got a lot of humidity, and at night the humidity falls, and it's just like driving in the fog. I kid you not. You can't believe it. It's just the particles of dirt catch the light, it comes right back at you, and you can't see. The vision has to come from farther away. It has to come from farther away. Something you look toward, not something that you try to shine out. Religion's trying to get everybody to shine out. God wants you to take a look at what He wants you to do. And like face of flint, head for that mark. We picked a lot of stones. I could probably fill this building 1,000 times. I built one stone pile I know that was bigger than this building. Me and my two sisters. I had another one that was too small. Me and my two sisters built a stone pile the size of this building. We'd drive the tractor up on top of it to dump off more stones. We had a big hydraulic crane with a 7/8 bucket, spent 4 days digging a hole, and he broke his dozer trying to push the stones into it. My dad went out the next year with a brand new tractor, a $30,000 tractor I'd bought, and drove into that hole that was full of mud and sunk down to the bottom. Just, hang a flag on it and call it lost.